Welcome back to Radio Free Gaming. My name is Cyril Lachelle, and I am, of course, joined with Wes Grogan.
Once again, I'm back.
In case you you missed the first part of our show, you missed a really delicious recipe for yummy Mexican lasagna with Cooking with Carol. But we're back with some usual video game-related stuff to get your mind off of that. Today we have a bunch of virtual console games to go through. We have a little bit of breaking news. We have a whole bunch of stuff that we don't like about the video game industry. And we're going to talk about tomorrow's article, which is going to be all about Sega. So, stick with us. We have a wonderful show. This is This Week in Defunct Games. Alright, so when it comes to the news this week, there wasn't a whole lot. I mean, there was a bunch of... What's that?
Sir, are you going to share the recipe for the bump cake later?
I hope so. That'll okay. Be after this, though.
Okay, good.
There wasn't a whole lot of news, unfortunately. The news was mostly made up of Grand Theft Auto and Manhunt 2 and the sort of controversies, but... one news that just broke a couple hours before we started recording was that Konami announced that they're going to be releasing Contra 4, which is going to be a direct sequel to the 1991 game Contra 3, Alien Wars, on the Super Nintendo. And I was a big fan of that game, and including a couple of games after that. But it's nice to see them actually go back and give this a numbered sequel. So...
Did they give any detail about the type of gameplay that will be included?
No, the press release says very, very little. It states that it's going to use both of the screens, though they don't really say how. I assume that it's still going to be a 2D shooter. Outside of that, though, they haven't given much information. I'm sure that in 3 weeks we'll know more, because they'll probably have it on display at E3.
Yeah.
But right now they're just, I mean, they didn't even release any screenshots or anything like that. So as of now, we don't really know much about it.
Well, my money's on it being controlled completely by the stylus.
I hope not. But knowing them, no, I guess this it makes sense for them to release it on a portable format, because the Contra series, it doesn't have the cachet that it used to have, unfortunately, and mostly because they've released way too many bad Contra games.
Oh, I think they've earned every bit of their reputation that they have with the Contra series.
No, I agree, but I figure that this is probably a pretty cheap way of getting the name back out there, and there are a hell of a lot more people that own the Nintendo DS than any of the three next-generation consoles. So it probably makes a lot of sense to revive it on this format and test the waters to see if it might work elsewhere.
And Contra has always done best with Nintendo.
I will be the first to admit that I really enjoyed Shattered Soldier, the 2D game over on the PlayStation 2.
It just didn't feel like a good fit to me, though.
I don't know. I always enjoyed that one, and I'm a really big fan of that Contra Hardcore on the Genesis.
Oh, crap. I forgot about that one. Yeah, okay, I take that back.
Those two made a lot of sense to me, so I'm...
Yeah, Hardcore is really damn good.
Every other one, though, the Neo Contra, not a big fan of that. Not a big fan of C, the Contra Adventure and Legendary War, and they released a lot of really bad ones. But I'm hoping that that they're able to resurrect the series, because I'd like to see a fully fledged next generation one in the next few years.
Well, I will point out in their defense that they have not yet put out Contra Quest.
Yeah, that's true.
They haven't done that yet.
No.
Yeah, I gotta close that. I'm sorry.
Well, unfortunately, that's the only bit of news this week that I could find. So we're just going to jump right into the virtual console, which... now, unfortunately, the retro games this week are really only the virtual console games. I believe the Xbox live arcade game this week was something called Band of Bugs, I think.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I
have the review code for it, but I haven't downloaded it yet or even tried it. So, but it doesn't. It's not a retro game, so you know. I don't feel bad.
Ninja B is really good, so I have faith in him.
Sure. it's like a tactical. Is it like a strategy game or something?
Yeah, it's a strategy game.
All right. Well, I'll be giving that a shot tonight. Probably right after we do this podcast. But in the meantime, we do have three virtual console games to talk about. A couple of which aren't very good, and there's my favorite. So,
well, let's fly through the two crappy ones, and then we'll get to the decent one.
All right. Well, let's start with the sports. Let's start with World Sports Competition.
Now, this is one of your all-time favorite games, right?
Yeah, this is actually, oddly enough, when I heard the games that were coming out, this is a game I didn't recognize. And then I played it, and I realized that I reviewed this less than 2 months ago. I had just done such a good job of getting it completely out of my head that it's not a good game. I gave this a 20% when I reviewed this. It's not a good game. For anybody that doesn't know what World Sports Competition is,
consider lucky.
It's essentially a five-player ripoff of Track and Field. And Track and Field was never a real good game either, and it's essentially just a button masher where you push the buttons as fast as you can through, you know, hurdling and running and swimming and all sorts of other stuff.
Now, see, the downside with, you know, Track and Field, I mean, yeah, it was a crappy game, but I'll tell you what World Sports Competition does that is absolutely amazing is it manages to remove any of the redeeming qualities of Track and Field.
Yeah,
I mean, this game is just painful.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is. And what's funny, of course, is that the original TurboGrafx control has these turbo, you know, has the turbo built into it,
right,
so that you don't have to get carpal tunnel playing this game. But of course, you don't have that with the Wii control. You know, even if you get the classic control thing, so. It's just such a hard game to play. The graphics aren't good at all. There are a couple of different modes that I do like. The skeet shooting is cool. That's fun to play back and forth. You just hand the control back and forth. But outside of that, the button mashing competition stuff, I hate that.
Well, you know the mode that I think is best, right?
Well,
the one where you hit the power button. And that's a challenging game, but it's really rewarding.
Exactly. We also have NES Open Golf. Not to be confused with NES Open Tournament Golf, for what it's worth.
Right, yeah, there's well, not a whole lot of difference, really. But
No, just different courses.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, this is one of the early ones where it may have been great for its time, but it really hasn't aged well.
Yeah, I was actually kind of surprised because I had really good memory of the first golf game that came out in probably the mid '80s that was just called Golf.
Right.
And I had fond memories of that playing that as a kid. And you know, I'm not a huge golf fan, but you know, I've played some golf games since, you know, the Tiger Woods and the Hot Shots Golf and whatnot. And it's amazing how much better the golf games are now than they were back then. They're just a bit unforgiving in a lot of spaces. So,
yeah, I mean they were great for their time. I mean, compared to, you know, in television golf or whatever. I mean, hell, this is way beyond.
Absolutely.
But it wasn't good.
And what's great about this game, though, if there's any redeeming quality, is that it has Mario in between both Princess Peach from, of course, Super Mario Brothers, and Princess Daisy from Super Mario Land, which is just awkward.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. No, you got to wonder about the conversation that took place afterwards between them, you know?
That is the stuff of fan fiction.
Yeah, Mario's sitting there going, oh no. You really got to wonder.
And you didn't think we were going to have a Mario impression in this episode.
So, yeah, I'm really no good at it.
Maybe we should move on to the one good game, the shining beacon of light this week, which is Bloody Wolf, which is not to be confused with Operation Wolf. Bloody Wolf is a classic overhead shooter for the TurboGrafx that's sort of in the same vein as Guerrilla War and Mercs.
And Data East, baby. It's all about Data East.
Yeah, and what I love about this game, outside of that it's just a violent shoot 'em up, what I love about the game, though, is that it's almost as if they had a checklist of video game cliches, and they just went through and they just checkmarked all of them. Like you know, the very first thing you hear is the your commander or whatever says, you need to go in and save the president.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it has the only villain, the only enemies that you have to shoot at come in different colors, and then you can always tell how difficult they are based on what color they are, and of course they're red barrels that explode. I mean, it's just one cliche after another.
Well, don't forget the fact that the heroes go in equipped with as little as possible.
Oh, absolutely. And even with all those conventions, it's still a lot of fun. And I found it really, again, very very unforgiving, though, because, you know, you die and then you start right back at the beginning of the level.
Yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
It's so easy to die in the game, too.
That's where you're seeing its arcade roots. You know, I mean, even with the port, it didn't get rid of the quarter-munching aspect of it.
No, definitely not.
So, I mean, you're definitely seeing that with it. But, going back to the idea of the equipment that, you know, you go in with, I think in any, mercenary, bar get-together, they're sitting back thinking, what is the bare minimum I can get away with while saving the president? I can do it with a knife.
Yeah, exactly.
And then off they go. And, you know, the poor president is fucked.
Yeah, yeah. It's as if all these people decided to watch Rambo right before designing these games.
Exactly, exactly. And this kind of mindless, completely pointless, blow everything up gameplay. I'm glad that they've announced Contra 4, because there's not that kind of game anymore.
No, yeah, there really isn't. I mean, the closest we have these days, it seems, is we had Geometry Wars, which is essentially the same thing except without real people.
Yeah, yeah, and I want a Russian to kill.
Yeah,
I want a terrorist. I want that. But, I mean, people want their storylines and, their depth of gameplay and crap like that.
They need to give us a sequel to Smash TV.
Yeah, they really do.
What the heck is that?
Well, they tried to, but then the arcades died.
Yeah. Well, every so often Midway says that they're thinking about it, but then they just never do it. What's that?
Well, The Grid, I think, was the game they were trying to put out.
Yeah.
And it featured a lot of the Mortal Kombat characters and crap like that. And it just never really came out. Because the arcades died.
And Total Carnage was sort of a pseudo-sequel. And you don't see that anywhere either. They should put that on the Xbox Live Arcade.
Yeah, it's been included in some compilations. Yeah. But it'd be nice to see it really done right.
Online play.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing it.
Yeah.
So,
speaking of, yeah. And I know this is off of the Virtual Console, but speaking of Bloody Wolf and Rambo 1, have you seen the trailer for the new Rambo?
No, I was totally going to bring that up, too. I absolutely was.
Go ahead.
He's going out there and he's killing the Viet Cong or whatever again.
Yeah. I just don't like these people.
And
he
looks so old now.
Oh, God, I know. And he rips a guy's throat out with his bare hands.
No.
And jumps up on the back of that truck and, blows him away.
It's like, just way overkill with those. I mean, it's so violent.
It's absolutely horrible. It's like Rambo starring in the AO version of Manhunt 2.
that John Rambo trailer may be the most violent thing I've ever seen.
Well, at that point, it's not only saying what's the least amount of equipment I can go in and do this with. Who's the oldest guy we can find? You know, we really don't like this guy. We don't really want to rescue him. Let's send John Rambo.
It's you know, I don't get off on a rant here or anything, but I mean, it's like a whole resurrection of all these old franchises coming back.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's we got a new Die Hard later on this year. We got we had Rocky last year. We have Rambo. I think it's this year. And we have Indiana Jones next year.
Yeah, here's the thing. Rocky at least had a reason to do one more. I mean, they made it work in the storyline.
Sure. They couldn't end it with the really bad Rocky.
Right. I mean, I don't blame them for doing Rocky Balboa, and it was an enjoyable movie. I don't hate it at all. But
does he die at the end?
No.
Oh, man.
No, but he goes happily into the night.
Ah, he should have died.
Yeah, it would have been cool, but
You think Rambo's gonna die at the end of this one?
I can only hope.
Yeah, me too.
I'm still mad at him for his cartoon, so
what?
I can only hope.
Why are they doing another? Why are they doing another Rambo? Was there couldn't have been an outcry for another Rambo? who are these people that still want another Rambo?
I think they're the people that don't realize that Sylvester Stallone is older than he was.
I mean, these must be the same people that, you know, have been wanting Rob Zombie to do a remake of Halloween.
Yeah, or, I mean, well, we're getting that Live Free or Die Hard crap, you know, with Bruce Willis. I mean, the man is old.
Yeah, he is. But with age, he's been able to jump farther.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah, well, those trailers, it looks like he can jump, like, 100 feet.
So I guess the older you get, the more you exaggerate, which would explain the Rambo trailer, too.
Yeah.
No, I don't know why they're doing this. I'm all for the 80s. It was a great decade. I enjoyed it. But some things need to stay there. I'm not asking for a Breakfast Club 2, you know? Who would? I mean, that's just scary.
Yeah.
God, I wish I never thought of that one.
Yeah, don't give them any ideas.
No, I really shouldn't. But yeah, it's just completely over the top, and it's complete crap.
Yeah.
And, all of these old dying action stars need to realize they're old dying action stars.
Yeah. Well, and with that, I think that concludes our virtual console section.
We stretched on that one, didn't we?
Yeah, we really did. This is Jesus. and at least we don't have to talk about what comes out on like the retail side. Because then we'd be talking about Fantastic Four.
Oh, God.
I mean, we're in the middle of summer, or we're like at the beginning of summer, so, I mean, it's, you know.
Let's just say that if we had to talk about Fantastic Four, you'd be looking for a new co-host.
Yeah, that's...
I have my limits.
I'm sure that'll be retro eventually.
Yeah, eventually, yeah. Yeah. So. Joy.
But... Something not on this episode.
No. On this episode, we get to talk about me for a little bit.
Yeah. And when we come back, we will be talking about Wes's second installment of A Brief History of Gaming. So you'll want to stick around for that. We'll be back in just a few moments. Welcome back. My name is Cyril Lachelle, and you're listening to This Week in Defunct Games. I am, of course, joined by Wes Grogan.
And I really feel bad for you.
Yeah, me too. For the second section of This Week in Defunct Games, we're going to talk to Wes about his upcoming article that's actually going to be published, I think, tomorrow on Friday. And this is going
tomorrow,
to be...
Friday from when we're... Wait, today is... But when they listen to it, it's... Okay, yeah, I'm good.
It'll be tomorrow.
Okay.
Or Friday, the 22nd? Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
So, anyway, without the mass confusion, this is going to be Wes's second episode of A Brief History of Gaming, which is our newest show on Defunct Games. It's a show dedicated entirely to classic, or to teaching and learning about the classic games and systems and debacles and what happened in the past and whatnot. The first episode, which if you haven't read, you really need to go back and check out, was all about Ralph Baer. And this episode actually touches on something that's a little more current, which is the innovations that Sega made. Now, usually you hear about the innovations that Nintendo made because everybody has a love affair with Nintendo. But believe it or not, Sega also had a lot of innovations, and that is what the second episode is all about. So, Wes, would you mind telling our audience a little bit about what you were thinking when you wrote this article?
Yeah, first I want to say that I'm not going to give out my address so nobody can kill me. I know there's a lot of Nintendo fanboys out there, and they believe that, you know, every single invention ever made for video games was done by Nintendo, even before Nintendo entered video games, but it doesn't work that way. Sorry. Sega did some really interesting, really creative, and really risky things with their technology, their software, their hardware, and sometimes it worked, and sometimes it didn't. And when it didn't work, it really, really didn't work. But, you know, concepts such as 3D glasses, lock-on technology, I didn't talk about it in the article, but I should have, but, you know, the really innovative blast processing. You know, these are things that, you know, Sega really did and, you know, pushed to the forefront.
Well, blast processing was more of a marketing gimmick, though, wasn't it?
No, totally real. Yeah, I will believe in blast processing until the day I die.
All right.
I talked to Yuji Naka. He told me personally.
So let's talk a bit about some of these innovations, though. Specifically, okay. Some of the ones that didn't work. We'll start there. What would you consider some of the innovations that didn't work that you think still need to be brought up?
Yeah, those are pretty much all of the Sega consoles that are on your site.
Yeah, the Sega CD, the Sega 32X.
And I hate to say it, but the Saturn, too.
Yeah, well... Why would you consider the Saturn to be innovative?
Just because of the concept behind it. They originally created the Saturn to be the most powerful 2D system. And then they heard about the PlayStation and they thought, you know what, let's add some 3D to this. So they did. And they ended up with this, you know, dual board, dual processing, dual RAM. I mean, everything was dual
right
within the system, which at the time nobody could program for the damn thing. Now, you look at the dual-core processors and dual-channel RAM and all of that, and they weren't that far off the mark.
Right.
You know, and then you've got the CD-ROM system, which, yeah, it didn't work for them, but, I mean, what the DS is, what, the only non-disc-based system now?
Yeah, exactly. So,
you know, they were just ahead of their time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, especially with the concept that it plugged right into the Genesis with the expansion. And, but... You know, again, the Genesis itself could not provide the colors needed, and nobody knew how to provide the gameplay needed. You know, certainly not Tom frickin' Zito, who, if he's, you know, around, then, you know, I hope he's in pain.
I'm sure he's around.
And I'm sure he's in pain.
Now, all right, besides the 32X and the Sega CD and whatnot, why don't we talk a little bit about some of the innovations you'd say actually succeeded? I think you would consider the Sega CD to have been a successful innovation, even though the console itself was not successful, based on what you just said.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in terms of marketing, it failed badly. Yes. But it showed everybody without a doubt that there was potential to it. There were a couple of games on there that really showed, you know, something could be done with this. The audio that it added to games, stuff like that. But, I would consider that, you know, technologically it was a success.
But what about, would you consider anything before that to be a success? I mean, what about, like, the Game Gear, the fact that you could use the backwards compatibility with the Genesis to play Master System games, or the fact that, you know, like you said before, the 3D glasses?
You know, the Game Gear has always fascinated me. Just the things that they did with it and tried with it, set it apart from the Game Boy, it fascinates me. You know, the TV tuner that they added to it, the adapter you could use to play the Master System games, and, you know, just the quality of the games themselves. I definitely think that the Game Gear showed what could be done with handhelds once the battery technology caught up to it. Which, unfortunately, you know, took a while.
Right, it didn't happen, and it's, anytime soon. And
I firmly believe that if it hadn't have been for the fact that the Game Gear ate through batteries at, like, you know, 2 every 2 hours,
right,
it would have been far more successful. It certainly provided entertaining games that people still enjoy.
I think there's no doubt about that.
Yeah. Yeah, and the ability for it to be that flexible is just, I mean, how can you not appreciate that?
Yeah, no, I agree. Now talking about the Saturn again, would you consider the analog stick that came with Knights to be?
That thing was ugly as hell.
Absolutely, but would you consider that to be one of Sega's innovations?
You know, I would. I mean, there were analog sticks before it, and obviously there have been a ton of analog sticks after it.
Yeah,
but again, they were the one that really showed how to do it. You know, theirs was the first one that was truly comfortable and that really worked, and, you know, measured the gradations of how much pressure you applied and all of that. So, yeah, I would definitely say that. And especially when you go on to how they did it with the Dreamcast and, you know, carried it through from there.
Now, when I think about Sega's innovations, the one thing and I know this is more recent, but the one thing that I keep coming back to, and I'm not sure if this is in your article or not, the thing that I keep coming back to is the modem that came with the Dreamcast, which of course just a dial-up modem, unfortunately. But since then, you know, the original Xbox came with a built-in network adapter. Now all the consoles the portables have a way of getting online right out of the box.
Right.
And, I mean, it these days, just a few years after the Dreamcast, it's, you know, that's chic. Everybody wants to be able to get online. Whereas when it came out on the Dreamcast, that wasn't even on people's radar. And it wasn't, I mean, the Dreamcast may have been the system where it came with the system, it may have been the first system where it actually came packaged with, but I mean the Saturn also had a modem as well. So I think that one thing that I keep coming back to is listening to, or is seeing Sega innovate when it comes to sort of online gameplay and peripherals and things like that they can do with it that get people to have, and that and maybe the Sega Channel also.
Yeah, well, I was going to say the Genesis actually had some experimentation done by Sega for, like, text-based multiplayer gaming.
Right.
So, I mean, Sega's always embraced that. And it was available with the Saturn, but you couldn't really do a damn thing with it.
They had that Daytona USA network game or whatever.
Yeah, but good luck getting a good experience out of it.
Yeah. There's no question that a lot of these innovations were a little ahead of their time.
Oh, yeah, they were way ahead of their time. I mean, look at the Dreamcast. You know, through that, you had true online multiplayer.
Absolutely.
You know, you could pop in Choo Choo Rocket or, well, Quake 3 was the one with the online, right?
Yes, Quake 3. Yeah. In fact, not only could you Could you play that against other people online, but you could play that with computer players online.
Yeah. Right? Oh, yeah.
Which,
yeah.
If, you know, even though Major Nelson and everybody that works at FASA on Shadowrun, you know, they'll disagree with you that if you bring that up.
They'd be wrong.
Because they seem to think that they're the ones that pioneered the whole cross-playing thing. But no, it's... you know, the Dreamcast had that, what, 7-8 years earlier?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Gamers have been dreaming about it for, you know, decades,
but they
really
shouldn't, because it's stupid.
Yeah, absolutely.
It doesn't matter if we can play against computer players and vice versa.
That was the point that I was going to make, is that 10 years ago, we could see both technologies growing to match each other.
Yeah.
Now it's pretty clear they're not going to.
No.
So, you know, Shadowrun, great. I can get on my 360 and play against people with a keyboard and mouse.
So what,
I'm not going to get my ass kicked much.
Yeah, well, you're not going to with Shadowrun because they've gimped the computer side of it so much that...
Well, that's true, yeah.
That, you know, the console will almost have an unfair advantage because of the auto-aim and whatnot. But
yeah, they just, I mean, we can make a show just listing all the ways they screwed Shadowrun up.
Shadowrun is a bad, bad game.
Yeah, they've just, I mean, and it could have been so much more. So
it started out as so much more. It started out as a single player only game.
Yeah, you remember the one on the NES way back when?
Yeah.
So, now that was a Shadowrun game.
All right, so back to Sega here for a couple more minutes. Now another innovation that I think of that I guess a lot of people don't really think of because not a lot of people actually got to see this was at one of the Consumer Electronics Shows I went to back in the early to mid 90s. Mm-hmm. They showed off a virtual reality helmet.
Oh yeah.
And they weren't the only ones to show off, but it seemed like they did that first. They were the ones that first came up with the idea of doing it on a console. But I mean also the Jaguar, Atari also had the plans to do one for the Jaguar. And nobody's actually done this since. I mean one could I guess argue that Nintendo did with the Virtual Boy, but that's a whole nother issue. But now I actually used the Genesis virtual reality glasses, and they weren't good. I can completely understand why it never came out. I mean the technology just wasn't there, especially for the Genesis.
Absolutely, yeah.
But would you say that would be an innovation? Them at least trying to do that.
Oh, it's beyond that. I mean, it's a technology that's used all the time now. The general, you know, engineering behind those 3D glasses, behind the virtual headset, all of that is exactly what you're using now when you go on theme park rides that are 3D or sure. Modern, you know, IMAX 3D movies or whatever. So, yeah, it goes way beyond, you know, possibly being revolutionary. I mean, it changed the way that people looked at it. It just had absolutely no application to the Genesis.
Now, in your article, do you talk at all about, like, the software side of the innovation? Like, for example, one thing I think about is that when it came down to it in the early 90s, Sega seemed to be a little bit more liberal when it came to what you could put on their console. This is especially true when it came to games like Mortal Kombat. Where Nintendo, you know, they made... who was it? It was Sculpture Designs, was that who developed it for the for Acclaim for the Super Nintendo?
It was two different companies that did it for each console.
Right.
And I think it was
Iguana. Anyway.
Yeah.
The point is that when they released the Super Nintendo one, as we all know, the blood was completely removed, as were I think four or five of the bloodier fatalities.
All of the fatalities.
No, I think there were a couple that remained the same, because weren't they just fire?
No, they took all the fatalities out. I understand it, they took them all out.
Alright, I guess I remember it differently, but that's another issue.
I'll check next show.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll get plenty of email
correcting
correcting us. Anyway, But the point is that whereas they took the gruesome aspects out, Sega they allowed all of that in without too much of a problem. And would you consider sort of their forward thinking of, you know, using, you know, that games aren't just for kids, but the idea that there is a market for, you know, these more, you know, mature games on the consoles. Would you consider that to be an innovation?
Well, first of all, Genesis created the older demographic for gaming. I mean, the college student preferred the Genesis, right. And it just kind of came that way. And I definitely consider it to, be innovative. The problem is that kind of fits in more with talking about, you know, the violent history of video games. You know, the problem with the Senate and stuff like that. So I was kind of planning on leaving it for that. But, yeah, there was a huge difference between the approach of Nintendo and the approach of Sega. And it really came out looking very badly in front of the Senate. You know, Nintendo was trying to present this pristine attitude. I mean, hell, for the NES, they made, you know, Maniac Mansion be edited.
Right, right.
You know, heaven forbid you have nude statues showing.
Well, not under John Ashcroft's watch.
Yeah, no, hey, you gotta watch out for that. So yeah, it's always blown my mind, the attitude that they had for a long time. I understand the fact that they wanted to make it family-friendly, but, I mean, they took it to the point where they were hurting the game in the process. You know, and Sega never did that. Sega also introduced a rating system.
Yeah.
Before ESRB ever happened, because of the fact that they had more edgier content. You know, so it's not that they were being completely irresponsible with it, which is a lot of thing that a lot of people, I think, don't realize.
That's a great point. No, that's a great point. So
I definitely plan on going into a lot of detail with that, because it's a huge thing.
Yeah. And is any of that stuff, the ratings or anything like that, is that any of that covered in the article that people will be reading tomorrow?
No, not in this one. There's going to be another dedicated article for that one, probably one of my longer articles.
Well, I guess everyone will just have to look forward to that then.
Yeah, way to spoil the surprise, man.
We won't tell you when.
Okay, there you go.
So getting back a little bit, getting back to Sega and the innovation aspect of it. Now, off of Sega, would you consider, you know, we all know that everybody considers Nintendo to be this really innovative company, but would you consider, do you think that they're right to believe that? Do you think that Nintendo is as innovative as everybody says, or do you think that by writing this article, do you think that takes anything away from Nintendo's innovations?
The intention behind the article was never to take anything away from Nintendo. Nintendo has done a lot for the industry. I do not deny for a second that they salvaged the industry when it was dying. I don't deny that for a second. The problem is that anybody who says that they create without building off of somebody else's work is lying. You know, everything comes from something else. If it weren't for the battles between Nintendo and Sega, which drove both of them to innovate greatly, then we wouldn't have half of the stuff that we have now, and we just take for granted. So no, I mean, I never intend to take away from Nintendo everything that they've accomplished and everything they've created. But that doesn't mean that they were the only ones that did it.
Yeah, you know, I'd agree with that. Do you think that other companies, you could write sort of this sort of article about other companies as well, like, say, maybe Microsoft or Sony?
Well, I probably couldn't do it for Philips.
Okay.
CDI, you know, I probably couldn't do it. For Microsoft, absolutely. You look at what they've done with the Live Arcade. They've right. completely changed the way that we look at online gaming. You know, you look at what they've done with Xbox Live, with achievements, you know, the social aspect of it. It's completely changed everything. You look at what Sony did with the DualShock.
Yeah.
I mean, that alone changed the way we looked at controllers.
And what about maybe the iToy as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And even the PSP, I mean, it's the first disc-based handheld.
Yeah, yeah, and yeah, absolutely. And it was really, really geared towards doing a lot more, you know, be it movies or music and all sorts of other things. It was a, you know, I definitely agree with that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think every company brings something to it in some way or another. Sometimes it's just to show what not to do.
So the idea that you're espousing is that perhaps you know, we shouldn't be so quick to write off all these other companies and their innovation. That
exactly.
Nintendo isn't the only one out there. That, I mean, it seems like it's a positive message, though, that it's not just. Well, why do you think that Nintendo fans would be against this sort of message?
Well, I think they won't now that I've pointed it out. But you know, just to have a little fun with them. But Nintendo has two big things that the fanboys cling to. One is the whole Mario thing, the IP. You know, you got the Metroid, the Zelda, the Mario. You know, they certainly have the best mascots. The other is that whole message of Nintendo innovates. You know, and you're seeing it come back 100-fold with the Nintendo Wii. And I just want to point out that, yeah, it's innovative, and they've done a lot of innovative things, but it's not the first motion-based controller. You know, it's... Right. The virtual console is an awful lot like the live arcade. You know, everybody borrows from everybody else. And to understand where one comes from, you need to look at it in a little more detail and say, well, who else might have done this? So I don't know that they will take it that badly. I certainly hope they don't, because like you said, that's not the point.
Right.
The point is to appreciate the effort that all the different companies have put into it.
Yeah, it's not just about one company.
Right.
Despite what the fanboys, I'm sure, would want people to believe.
Well, fanboys are well known for closing their mind to anything else anyway, so...
Absolutely.
Which gets into a rant.
Well, and I think with that, we're gonna shut the door on this topic. But I do want to remind everybody, of course, that Wes's article goes up tomorrow... should go up around midnight Pacific time, so look for it then, or when you get up. But it's a good article from what I remember of it, and I'm sure it will have funny pictures with humorous and sometimes witty captions.
And I have no responsibility over that. That's all Cyril.
Yes, and I'm. Last time I asked you what you were going to call, or what we're going to call the Ralph Baer article, so maybe and we used your name, so why don't you give us a prediction of what we'll call your Sega innovation article?
If I had my druthers, it'd be Sega does what Nintendo does.
Wow, that's profound.
I know, isn't it?
That. Yeah. I think we have the name of the second article. And so check back in tomorrow, that's Friday, defunctgames.com, and check out A Brief History of Gaming, Episode 2. Sega does what Nintendo does?
Yeah.
All right. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes to go through a brand new section that I'm sure you're going to be interested in, so... we'll be back in just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You are listening to This Week in Defunct Games. I'm your host, Cyril Lachelle. And, of course, we are joined with Wes Grogan.
Oh, God, are we still doing this?
Unfortunately, we are. Since we didn't have a whole lot to talk about this week, the Virtual Console was pretty lame, and there wasn't a whole bunch of news, and, well, we can only talk about Sega's innovations for a little while. Wes decided to take it upon himself and come up with a whole new section of stuff that, well, Wes, why don't you explain to our audience what's going on?
Yeah, I just want to talk about things that piss me off with the video game industry.
And that makes sense, and I think that this should probably get a little heated because I actually disagree with him on some points.
Woohoo!
So I think what we'll do is we'll take turns. We each have three things that we've written down that we don't like about the current video game industry.
And we did not discuss them ahead of time, so that I just want to put that on the record.
So, well, let's start with you, Wes. What's the first thing? Why don't you explain a little bit about what's the first thing that you think of when you pisses you off?
These are in no particular order, but the first one that I really want to bring up is something we just talked about, which is fanboys. They piss me off. Blind loyalty to a system does nothing to help the industry become better. You know, if Sony could put out a PlayStation 3, or let's say the PlayStation 4, okay, let's say that it's a bucket of turds, and all the Sony fanboys go out there and buy it because it's from Sony.
Isn't that what the PlayStation 3 is right now?
Well, yeah.
Oh, I'm just kidding.
In this case, it's a gold-plated bucket of turds. But, yeah, the point's basically there. But their blind loyalty does nothing to help anything. It goes all the way back to the Sega Nintendo Wars. But at least then they were arguing about things that matter, like, you know, games. You know, now it's all about who has the better system, who has the better hardware, and the games aren't even really mentioned with it.
I think that, to a certain extent, it was pretty frivolous back then in the Sega versus Nintendo debate of, like, the 16-bit era. I mean, I certainly remember it being pretty silly even back then.
But that's where I get to say, back in my day.
Yeah.
And therefore, it becomes better.
You know, I understand. But do you think that a lot of this has kind of been aided by, you know, message boards and forums and whatnot and on the internet?
Oh, hell yeah. You put the anonymity behind it, and anybody can say anything they want to.
Absolutely.
You know, and now you've got companies who, I'm sorry, you can call it a conspiracy theory all you want to, but they are paying people to post messages. I don't care what anybody says. These companies are paying people to put in positive messages about their equipment and negative stuff about other people.
Sure.
Because I've seen posts where nobody could be that dumb. Unless they're being paid to be that dumb.
Well, I've learned never to underestimate stupidity.
What can I say? I'm an optimist at heart.
Oh, I'm not anymore. You should read the emails that I get.
That's why you get them and I don't.
Yeah, I'll start forwarding them to you.
Yeah, because I'm not putting my address up.
Except for your email address, which you can find on each of your A Brief History of Time or A Brief History of Gaming articles just by clicking on Wes Grogan's name. That's Wes Grogan at the very bottom.
At the bottom of the History of Games, yeah.
Great. Just thank click you it and make sure that you send him as many internet slang acronyms as you can with LEET attached and maybe even a virus.
The more numbers you mix with letters, the happier I am. And Don, I'm waiting to hear from you.
So fanboys.
Put your word out.
Do you think there's anything good that comes out of fanboyism, though?
I don't. I think fanboyism, that's a great term. I think fanboyism fed directly into the arrogance of Sony in stating that they'll put out a system and people will buy it even if there aren't any games. It fed to the arrogance of Nintendo going into the Nintendo 64 and shutting out all of the third party. I think it only hurts the systems.
Well, couldn't Nintendo fanboys say that you're just, you know, a fanboy of some other system because you bash on Nintendo so much?
Sure, except for the fact that I also bash on the PS3, and I've already had the Red Ring of Death one time on my 360.
Well, that's one thing I have yet to have, so...
Yeah, you're lucky on that one. I mean, I'm better at repairing it, but... Yeah, no, the fact is that I try very hard to be hard on all of the companies out there because it's through the criticism that enables them to become better.
Do you think it's just easier right now to beg on Nintendo because they're doing so well, despite the fact that the Wii has very few really good games for it?
Well, I think the thing that hasn't become completely, you know, clear yet, at least for the hardcore gamer, normally it's the other way around where, you know, the mainstream doesn't quite get it as fast.
Right.
I think in this
right.
case, the hardcore gamer doesn't get it so much that it's a completely different audience. You know, and I think because of that, it might be easy to bag on Nintendo, but the fact of the matter is they're getting people to pay them that hadn't paid for games before. So... I don't know. I think Nintendo has gone from being a very, very definite third place, which is weird considering Microsoft was the new newcomer.
Right.
I think they've got themselves a very solid position doing something that they're very comfortable with.
Right.
So I don't bash them at all. I think the Wii is the perfect decision for what Nintendo does.
You know, what I just realized while listening to what we've been talking about here is that when I... For some odd reason, when I think fanboy, the very first thing that jumps into my mind is Nintendo fanboy, and not Sony or Microsoft. Do you think that right now the Sony and Microsoft fanboys are just less vocal?
Well, I think... I don't know. I mean, the 360, let's face it, the 360 is doing pretty well right now. You know,
right. It's a solid second... you know, of the next generation consoles, it's you know, a solid second place every month right now.
Yeah, I would almost say that it's the safe bet of the three.
Right.
You know, it's that horse. It may not win, but you're willing to put it in the top three.
And I can only imagine that the sales are going to skyrocket come September, and you know, probably soon after when they probably lower the price. I'm sure that as soon as it starts getting down into the Wii price range, we'll probably see, you know, 300,000 units being sold a month as well.
The Wii fanboys and the PS3 fanboys, they're different. Just for the fact that they don't have the games to play.
Right.
I mean, they simply don't. I mean, the Wii can say that they have the virtual console all they want to, but we've already talked about that this week. You know,
there have been many
where they'll put out three games, but you ask, why do they bother?
Right.
You know,
especially
I know
when the only game they released, you know, in a month is Mario Party 8.
Yeah, exactly. But the PS3 is having the same thing right now. I mean, their version of 5 is dying too. You know, it's just not coming along.
Yeah, but I would actually argue that because calling all cars is to many considered one of the best games on the system.
So name more.
Name more that they have coming out, or more that are really good?
More that are really good and are out right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the problem, is that they're...
Exactly.
You know, yeah, but it's going to take time. I mean, outside of Geometry Wars, in the first year of the Xbox Live Arcade, how many great original games do you remember seeing on the Xbox Live Arcade?
But see, that's why there were the 360 fanboys, and now there aren't. That's exactly my point, is once the PS3 and once the Wii get to the positions where they're comfortable, there are games to play and all of that, then you'll see those fanboys quiet down as well.
Sure.
I think the reason why the Nintendo fanboy is the first one that comes to mind is because we've gone from the N64 to the GameCube to the Wii.
Yeah.
For two generations now, they've been completely stomped on.
Well, and they did that to themselves.
Oh, they absolutely did, but that's exactly why... That's what we associate with them, is because they've been the loudest and the whiniest for a long time now.
Right, right.
You know, look at the people that got pissed because, Resident Evil 4 went to the PS2.
Right.
Who
freaking
cares?
Afterwards.
Yeah, exactly. Who cares? But that's exactly why we associate it with them.
And then, but then, I suppose, by the same token, the PlayStation 3 fanboys were loud when Devil May Cry 4 went multi-platform.
Bingo. Bingo. And that's
so they
exactly,
are out there.
But they're complaining about exactly the wrong things.
Yeah.
You know, and they're not doing anything to actually help anything. It's not like Nintendo is looking at the Sony fanboys and going, maybe if we do something different, we can get their business. Because they won't. I mean, that's really what it comes down to. And that's what annoys me. I just want people to open their eyes and realize that there are benefits to all of the consoles. We don't have a 3DO out there right now. There's,
right.
I mean, all of the consoles are solid consoles for whatever that audience may want.
Right, right. And at this point, I suppose the people that are buying the PlayStation 3s are buying it because they know that eventually, probably
right.
sooner than later, there's going to be some really strong software on it.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
just not here yet. And just like I suppose the Nintendo fanboys, or just Nintendo fans in general, are buying the Wii because they know that eventually, you know, that there's light at the end of this tunnel.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, at the end of the year, even if all three of the big games don't come out at the end of the year, you know, the Metroid, Smash Brothers, and Mario Galaxy, at least two of them will come out for sure.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
So, I mean, you know, they can buy it, and, you know, it's only $250, so they can buy it, they can collect us for a few more months, and then come August, come, you know, probably November, we'll probably see some of the big hitters.
See, it could collect dust for a few months, or you could just do, like, you know, it actually came with a pack-in game.
Right.
Holy shit.
Not a good one, though.
Well, no, but, I mean, at least it came with one.
Yeah.
You know, when
the bowling part's fun.
It can be a lot of fun, yeah. But the most promising thing that I've seen so far with this generation is what Microsoft did with the European PS3 launch. They went directly after Sony with that one. And like it or not, they got Sony's attention with it. And I think that's promising. It's making Sony realize, crap. You know, there's actually people coming after us.
Well, like, I did, like I said, the whole article, I did an article, I don't think it was a year ago or so, saying that every 10 years or so, we need a regime change. We need we need somebody else to, because, I mean, the problem that Sony's having right now is the same problem that Nintendo was having back during the Nintendo 64 era. They just didn't understand, you know, what the audience wanted, because they just assumed that people would just follow them no matter what.
Exactly.
They were the market leader for 10 years, so why, you know, shouldn't they continue to be the market leader? And who knows, maybe they will be the market leader at some point again.
You know, I will tell you the thing that blew my mind more than anything else with the PlayStation 3. The PlayStation 2 was absolutely the most successful system for last generation. Nobody can deny it.
It
was also
probably the most successful system of all systems, especially when it comes to, like, library lineup.
Absolutely, absolutely. It was also the weakest of its generation.
Sure.
So Sony completely lost why the PS2 was the way it was.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't because it had the top-of-the-line graphics. It wasn't because it had the, you know, the you know, Blu-ray or, you know, whatever the equivalent would be.
Yeah.
It was because it was affordable, and it was because the games were there.
Yeah, no, I agree completely with that. Okay, hey, so let's move on to my choice. So your first choice was fanboy.
Mm-hmm.
Fanboys. Fanboyism. My first choice is actually where fanboys go to buy video games. I'm, of course, talking about video game retailers. And don't get me wrong, I'm not against all video game retailers. I'm just against the electronics boutique. I'm against the GameStops. I'm against...
Which are the thing.
Right, right. I know. But, I mean, I'm against sort of the, you know, the mall retailers. I'm against that sort of thing. And it's not that I don't want places to buy games. I like the idea of being able to walk into a store and buy games. What I hate more than anything about video game retailers is just the things that come with them, especially when it comes to how they hound you for reservations, how they you know, they're constantly looking to buy your used games for a fraction of what they're going to sell it for. And it's just, and to top it all off, every time I go in there and I listen to the people that work there talk to the customers, I realize that they usually don't even know what they're talking about. I mean, well before the Wii came out, I mean, a good 6 months before the Wii came out, I heard I heard one of the employees suggest that their manager just got a Wii to try it out from Nintendo.
Yeah, and right.
It's awesome. I mean, you know, there's no way. And,
no.
And
Nintendo doesn't give anything away.
No, of course not. And it's ludicrous, but they say it because they know they can get away with it because they're not going to get called on it. And
as long as we're not in the store.
Right, right. And there are other problems I have with the retailers. I hate that it always smells like piss.
Why is that?
It's got to be the little kids. I mean, I hate that every time I go in there, somebody's playing a Nintendo DS.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand that. I got nothing against the Nintendo DS, but come on now. There's got to be other things you can do. And it's just that sort of the hubris that they have, sort of the arrogance that they have, that like they're working at a video game retailer, and
yeah.
So they're superior to you, even though they're making minimum wage at a part-time job that kind of sucks.
Oh yeah, yeah, it's a shitty job.
And,
I actually know a couple of people that, you know, I'm not going to name any names or, you know, state the location, but they work at the EB Games here, and, I mean, they treat them like crap. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. You
know, it's like working minimum wage for EA, you know? I don't know why anybody would do it. But, you know, when, do you remember the game Gex?
Gex?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well,
for the three,
Dana Gould or whatever, right?
Yeah, yeah. Dana Gould went into one of the, I don't know if it was like KB or whatever back then, but Dana Gould went into one just wanting to get a copy of Gex, and the salesperson behind the counter was like, "Oh no, actually it's pronounced Jex, and it's about a dinosaur." And it's, you know, I mean, what more can you say? The idiocy of the people. I mean, I don't expect them to be, you know, video game historians by any means, but they could at least know what the hell they're selling. You know, when I asked for a Castlevania Portrait of Ruin and they asked me what Castlevania is, there's a problem.
Yeah.
They should at least know what the hell Castlevania is. You know, especially if it just came out.
Well, every year, around this time every year, you know, I'd have the E3 badge already, and I'd be, you know, my flight would be booked, everything like that, and I'd go in there and I'd ask, you know, if anybody from that location is going to E3, because, you know, they tend to get in, you know, some of the part-time employees tend to get in, and
right.
and you know, usually they'll say no, and then I'll show them the card and whatnot, but. This last year, when I asked that, the guy's like, "I don't want to go to E3." Well, you don't?
Who doesn't want to?
No, I don't want to. I think it's better as a retailer if I stay away from that sort of influence and I only get my information from the magazines.
You mean like what, knowledge?
Yeah, and
wow, or, you know, direct access to the people making the games. I mean. Yeah, it absolutely. I mean, it would be one thing if they just said, "I don't know."
Yeah,
you know, that would be one thing. But when they try to hide it, it's like a doctor not knowing what you're sick with, so they just make shit up. Which I think some of them do that anyway. But
oh,
that's
yes,
a completely different topic. But I mean, it certainly isn't going to make you feel any better when it turns out that he told you that you have E. coli, and oh, whoops, it's a brain tumor.
Exactly.
But you know,
unfortunately, your insurance isn't going to cover it anyway.
Exactly.
If you know, there's anything I learned from watching Sicko, it's that.
I mean, I walked into a used game store a few weeks ago, and they had Sonic the Hedgehog for the 360 on their wall for like $50. And I asked them, "Do you ever feel guilty for selling it?" And they looked at me like, "No, it's a great game." Okay, nobody thinks it's a great game.
I'm sure there's somebody that thinks it's a great game.
The people at Sega didn't think it was a great game.
No.
It blows my mind. It absolutely does. And it just feeds into, you know, what my next one would be anyway. But
so what's your second choice of things that piss you off?
You know, I'm going to talk about I'm going to change it. I'm going to go with the complete lack of understanding regarding gaming in the more mainstream world. You know, you look at the news, you look at the Senate that's constantly trying to regulate it, and they don't know what the hell is going on. You know, you look at the parents that don't take the time to sit down and do it with their kids. You know, whatever happened to playing a game with your kid?
Yeah, but I mean, do you think that the politicians, just getting on that, do you think that the politicians want to know? I mean, do you think, I mean, because they could learn if they wanted to, but I mean, they're not stupid. Some of them aren't. They know that if they attack video games, there's almost no reason not to attack video games,
right?
Because I mean, if they pass a bill and it goes, you know, and even if it gets struck down by, you know, the courts, you know, they still look like they were doing something for the family, and then they can advertise that. Whereas if their competition was against, or their the people that are running against them, if they were against that bill to begin with, then they're going to run advertisements that simply say, you know, so and so is against family values. He wants more violent video games in your kids' living room. And so, I mean, it's almost they can do it for political gain, not because they don't understand it, but because most people in general, most voters, don't understand it.
No, so, that's exactly it. They all feed into each other.
So that's almost worse, because that's almost more sinister.
Right. Right.
That's preying on the idea that people are too stupid to understand and I guess that's what politicians do in general, is they prey on they prey on the sound bites and the things like that make it easier. I mean, these are the things that win elections, you know.
But the thing, and I'll tell you exactly who I think is to blame for this. It's the video game industry. We have the IGDA. We have all of this in place for it to all be organized, and yet they're not doing anything to educate, not just about the ESRB, because, I mean, whoop-de-doo, you know, they can't control what the retailers do with it once it gets to them. They need to move beyond that. They need to tell them what games are about, why games are enjoyable, and why they're not harmful. And instead of doing that,
that's
time to get dragged in front of the Senate, they need to go out there and they need to tell the parents.
But, I mean, at some point, do they need to say that? I guess that's my thing, is that it's, when you really come down to it, should you really have to explain why games are fun? I mean, you don't hear the music industry or the movie industry having to go out and say, hey, movies are good because they tell really interesting stories. Or,
you know, do you know why they don't? It's because they've already had to do that.
I suppose, but it seems like, I don't know, the people that I'm most offended by aren't even the politicians. I mean, or just the sort of average, you know, person. The people that I'm most offended at, or the group I'm most offended at, is the media. And,
right.
And just the pure laziness that comes with, they're not even interested in getting quotes from the other side, or, you know, especially when it comes to a controversy. They're just, they don't research anything. They don't do anything that would be considered investigative reporting. And
it's always been that way with them. When the NES came out, you know, when it first came out, and they had, you know, Rob the Robot and all of that crap. God, it was a morning news show. I don't remember exactly where. I don't have the source in front of me. But, you know, they were showing a clip of the NES in action, and then they had the Rob the Robot next to them. And they were talking about how it could bring water to you if you wanted it. I mean, they didn't know what the hell they were talking about. You know, they were just trying to go with it and sound hip. But
and I'm telling you, that would have made Rob useful.
It would have let him do something, at least.
No,
you know,
I agree with that.
It's been going from the start, and nobody's called them on it, which, again, I hate to say it, but that goes back to the industry itself.
Well, I think there are people that do call them on it. It's just they don't listen to those people. I mean, every time I find misinformation, you know, from CNN or one of the news channels or whatnot, when they talk about games, especially during, like, video game launches and whatnot, I always email and I always write, so...
There's going to have to be a lot more of it for this industry to stop from constantly being attacked.
Well, you know, and it's only a matter of time before the people that don't understand die or get too old to even care.
Well, you know, we're getting older all the time, and we grew up with it.
Yeah, and that's exactly it.
There are many people in my generation that don't know about it.
Exactly.
So, yeah, but I just, for the moment, it pisses me off.
So this segues actually pretty well into my second thing that pisses me off, which are gutless companies. And the segues well because my main bitch is actually with Rockstar and the whole Take-Two and 2K whatnot.
Yeah.
I am all for video game companies pushing the envelope. I actually prefer that. I like it when, you know, the companies make something like Grand Theft Auto, San Andreas, or make, you know, Manhunt and whatnot. However, as soon as they get into trouble or as soon as the controversy arises, they tend to back down. And this is especially, I especially hated this when the whole hot coffee thing was going on.
Oh, God, yeah. Nothing in there like that.
In the perfect world, okay, it's bad enough that Rockstar lied about it not being in there in the first place. I cannot defend them on that. That was bad. It made all of us look bad when they did that. However,
right.
What he should have done in Cyril's perfect world, what he should have done is he should have come out and he should have said, "Hey, look. It's in there. You need a cheat code to get in there to access it. And yeah, okay, it's a couple of people having sex with their clothes on. But it shouldn't change the rating because it says strong sexual content on the back of the box. That's what it's rated M for, or one of the reasons at least.
You have to really work at getting to it and know what you're doing.
Right.
Yeah.
And even if it was part of the game, so what? You know, they should have led a whole campaign saying, "Hey, grow up. These are adults buying these games. It's not a matter of of little kids. So what?"
See, God of War showed that really well with that whole, you know, bed on the boat thing. You know, the problem wasn't the content of the sexual minigame. The problem is that they backed off of it. They lied about it. You know, that's exactly the problem with it. I agree with you. That pisses me off, too, because it doesn't help anything. You know, it just makes everything look that much worse. It's like, you know, oh, well, even they're ashamed of it.
Absolutely. And that's it. If they're going to push the envelope, if they're going to be the bad boys of video games, then damn it, you need to be the bad boys of video games. You need to stand up for yourself when people start attacking you. You can't just... You can't just back down because the water gets warm. You gotta go after it. And as long as they don't do that, then we're in a world of hurt.
And, yeah, exactly. And that's
and then they're dealing with that right now because as of this recording, Manhunt 2 is still currently rated AO, which of course could change any day because, you know, they could debate it with the ESRB. They could cut some stuff out. Obviously, you know, it probably will get the M rating eventually, but they should be able to just take a stand and say, hey, we can do this. Because I mean, if they're not going to allow AO rated games, which I guess neither Nintendo nor Sony will allow it on their platform, then why even have the AO rating?
Exactly. Exactly.
And, I mean, let's. There are things in this world worth fighting for, and yeah, sometimes you have to lose a little money, but it makes the industry better in the long run.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised that Nintendo isn't supporting this, but
right.
the fact that Sony is backing away from it just it. I mean that amazes me.
Well, this is the same company that wouldn't allow bare tits in BMX XXX.
But they were okay with it in God of War.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's. I mean, that's the other thing too, is that it just changes all the time.
Right.
You know, and you know, we've got it now where it's what, Great Britain and Ireland both banning it.
Right.
You know, before it's ever even released or even seen.
Exactly.
You know, Gamefly and Blockbuster aren't going to carry it. It's just going left and right, and it just amazes me.
Well, I'm set up to do the review of it, so hopefully I will still get my review copy.
yeah, and you know what? If they put it out, they damn well better be ready to stand behind it.
Absolutely, and I wish they would release the AO rated version that they have, and then maybe also release an M rated version.
That wouldn't be such a bad idea. Give the option. I mean, you can go out and rent an unrated movie today.
Exactly.
You know, and I think gaming wouldn't hurt to have something similar. Yeah. And the other thing, if they don't stand behind it now, they're never going to be able to again, because this is the moment when JT is muzzled.
Yeah.
You know, they need to take advantage of that and use that to maybe push things a little bit. And if they're not going to stand behind it when they push it, they need to stop fucking pushing it.
But what this whole Manhunt 2 thing and the adults-only rating thing, what this all reminds me of is the NC-17 rating, which...
It's exactly the same thing.
It's almost a farce because, you know, if your movie gets an NC-17 rating, it's just like, you know, you might as well not even release it.
Exactly.
Because no theater is going to stock it, and you're not going to get the movie in at Blockbuster, and it's just, you know, what this shows is that when it comes to movies and when it comes to video games, we don't have a workable adult rating, and I think that's awfully sad.
We don't have a workable way of dealing with adult desires, yeah. Much less adult ratings.
What I don't understand is how is it that this game is so bad? This, you know, adult only. Yet, you know, Hostel 2 came out not that long ago with an R rating, and I mean, the stuff in that, the torture in that, which is what
or
the whole thing.
Saw movies, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah. No, there's no reason for it. And, you know, like I said, the videos, you know, you have the unrated option. You can go with the unrated or you can go with the R-rated.
Exactly.
Now, there needs to be something beyond the line in the sand saying this or nothing. You know, and again, it goes back to the lack of information. It goes to the fact they're not standing behind it. I mean, there's a lot of reasons for why it's a lot of crap.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so then we go on to what's your third thing that pisses you off?
I'm going to go with the developer recognition.
All right.
Other than, you know, the ideas of, like, you know, the Nolan Bush knows, Cliffy B.
Sure.
You know, Will personalities Wright. Such as that. Will Wright, Sid Meier's. There are very few people that are in the trenches making these games that we enjoy that we ever hear anything about.
Right, right.
You know,
right.
And it's become such a joke that even in Guitar Hero 2, you get an achievement for sitting through the credits. You know, and it pisses me off. There's no reason why, if we're going to approach video games as an art form and use that as our number one defense, I damn well want to know who the artists were that are doing it. You know, even if we can't get down to the individual programmers, even if we can't do that, I want to know the person who came up with the vision. I want to know the person that came up with the design. And it doesn't happen often. Not nearly enough for as many games come out.
No, I definitely agree with that. But is there a way to do that? I mean, we don't really know that much about... We know more about the directors, don't get me wrong, when it comes to, say, movies or whatnot. But when it comes right down to it, we don't know that much about most of the directors, most of the writers. It's really just some rock star directors and writers that we really know of, people that do really, really strong work, if you will.
Right, right. But even now with the games, there are people that are doing very, very strong work, and you don't see, like, you know, David Jaffe's calling all cars. You see calling all cars. You know, and the most that you're going to see is, you know, EA Presents or EA Big, you know, Presents or whatever. It's you almost never get beyond the production company.
Right.
And even if they can't do it to the level that, like, movies do, I mean, we'll never have actors in video games. I mean, that's pretty much a given. That's the whole concept behind it.
It's well, unless it's Dana Plato.
Oh, well, God, yeah. Make sure she gets credit. But, you know, even if you can't do that, why not EA Presents a game designed by?
Sure.
How much more effort would that take?
We have that to a certain extent. You know, whenever, you know, a Metal Gear Solid trailer pops up, we always see, I mean, before it's, you know, that we even see footage of the game, it always says, you know, a game by Hideo Kojima.
But a lot of that is recognizing the cinematic roots behind that particular brand anyway.
Yeah.
And you've got the Shigeru Miyamoto's and, you know, all of that. Of but it's still not quite the same thing. It's still Nintendo Presents. You know? And I would like to see it where there was a little more recognition, where you don't have to go through the obscure button presses required to even get to the credits.
I agree with you. That's hard to argue.
The ironic thing behind it all is that was EA's original concept. Yeah. I mean, when Trip Hawkins first started EA, it was all about recognizing the developers. And then they changed. And it was pretty much all over at that point.
Yeah.
They've never gone back to it. So, I don't know. It pisses me off. There may be not a lot to say about it, but I want to see the developers who put their ideas onto these discs. I want to see them recognized at least.
Well, do you think that there's going to come a time when, you know, maybe 10 or 20 years down the road, when people are interested in sort of the, you know, in sort of the same way as they are with movies? For example, what I'll do is, you know, if I watch a movie that I haven't seen, or I don't recognize the filmmaker or the writer, you know, I'll check on IMDb. And, you know, I'll see what else that person has done. Do you think that 10 or 20 years down the road, or maybe even shorter, we'll have people that, you know, play a game and say, hey, I wonder what else this guy has done?
I think it would pretty much have to. I think for the industry to continue for that length of time, they're going to have to. I mean, they're going to have to present it more than just big company business.
Yeah.
They're going to have to make it more where people can identify to it. You know, especially if they're going to try and bring in a more casual gamer. I think it's going to be required, because that's what we associate with our entertainment now.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing this happen, because I think that I definitely agree with you. I think that we need, some of these people need some better recognition. Maybe not everybody. I don't think that we need to know the names of everybody that play-tested.
But on the same hand, I mean, you and I have both done interviews with all kinds of people, and some of them are really fascinating guys.
Absolutely. And I think that's something to, you know, I think that's something to ask the developers if they want that. And I suppose that in 3 weeks,
you can bring it up.
I can bring it up to all the people at E3 that, and see, you know, what they're, you know, and we're in the convention season between E3 and PAX and a couple of the other ones. More than a few opportunities, but, you know,
you bring it up and consider it a favor.
I will definitely do that. But I mean, at the same time, they're still debating whether or not they like the name Casual Games.
Yeah, I know. So, yeah.
You know, we'll see. We'll see. But we're running a little low on time, so I'm going to quickly go through my third thing that pisses me off. And this is this isn't something that has to do necessarily with the video game industry. It's more of a byproduct, if you will. These my big complaint are all those people, and this probably includes a lot of people that are listening to this podcast right now. The people that just look at the score and decide not to read the review. You know who you are. But what these people will do is they'll go to a website, they'll say, "Oh, GameSpot finally reviewed such and such game," and they don't really care what GameSpot says about it. They just want to know the score. Did it get better than an 8? And you can always find out who these people are. Just go on any forum on GameFAQs, and just look around. I mean, no matter what game it is, you know, if somebody gave it a low score, you'll find a thread that says GameSpot gave this a 5. Why? Yeah. Well, why don't you read the fucking review? and I'll say that. I'll respond to these people. Dude, just, you know, they wrote 3,000 words about this game so that you could learn something about it.
Right.
You know, and GameSpot, not to pick on them or not, but they even have a pros and cons section so that if you don't want to read the 3,000 words, they still have, like, you can read it like 30 20. Words. And you, like, oh, hey, this appears to be a short game with really bad animation and constant slowdowns.
What really bothers me about it is the fact that these guys are playing some truly bad games to keep other people from having to play them.
Absolutely.
You know? And there's no appreciation for that. On top of that, and this bothers me too, it's the fact that it's just fucking lazy.
It's absolutely lazy. And I come at this from the standpoint of somebody who I suspect there are a lot of people that don't read my reviews and just skip right to the score. And you know, I'm sure a lot of them probably wouldn't admit it.
I admit it.
But I mean, let's be honest here. You know, I spend time writing and crafting these brilliant reviews. I mean, these could be, I should win a Nobel Peace Prize for this shit, but no. Isn't there a Nobel Peace Prize for good writing?
I don't think so, but there should be.
Yeah, there should.
Yeah, but I'll tell you, you know, with your reviews, if it's above a 40, it's probably not interesting enough to me. You know, I like the 1%. I like the 3%. You know,
I try not to do those anymore.
When Chad put up the Wand of Gamelon review, I mean, that made my weekend right there, you know?
He'll be nice to know that he's referenced again.
Yeah, I'm sure he's been looking for that.
He says he has reviews too. He's going to come back with some reviews.
I'd like to see him come back with some reviews. When his last review is Croc Legend of the Gobbos.
Yeah, I know, you can't leave it that way.
No, that's not the stopping point, you know? And then Arena Maze of Death
To be fair, that would make me want to stop playing games, too.
I would agree with you.
Talking to the guy who went through 4 different versions of The Godfather. I know what it's like to not want to continue to play games.
Which goes exactly back to why you should appreciate the people that review it.
Yeah.
You know, you didn't do the 4 versions of The Godfather because you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it the first time.
And then the next 3 times?
Well, the second time was the PSP one, which is just horrendous. And then, you know, I was excited to go through the one for the Xbox 360 because I'd get achievement points, but...
Right.
All that work, I got like 160 achievement points. Because the achievements in that are really hard.
Yeah, that's what I've heard.
And And then I got the Wii version, and I was excited to play that because of the waggle. But, yeah, no.
Yeah, and, you know, I agree with you completely. I mean, if you're going to bitch about something, know why you're bitching about it.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
And about the score, know why you're complaining about the score. Disagree with her points. Don't just say, why did they do that?
This person's so like biased.
Yeah, it's a Zelda game. It has to have a 99.
And, well, and remember, numbers are biased.
Yeah. You had to throw that in there, didn't you?
That's the stupidest thing anybody has ever said.
Yeah.
Though,
no, actually, the stupidest thing I've ever heard anybody say is this woman who was warning people not to buy an Xbox 360. The reason she told them not to is because of the power brick. She said that it was 5 pounds of equipment dangling off the back of the 360, and that's not including the weight of gravity. That was the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
I don't even know what to say about that.
5 pounds plus gravity. I mean, that's pretty heavy.
That is really heavy.
Yeah, yeah, so you gotta watch out for that.
All right. Well, I think with that, we have said almost as much as we can say on these three topics, so...
Certainly within an hour.
We're more like an hour and a half now. Either way...
Yeah, maybe next week we'll have to do the things we love about the video game industry.
Yeah, well, we'll definitely probably be revisiting the things we hate about the video game industry, because I could probably go on for hours about the things that I don't like. And you know what? I'll tell you what. Probably I'll have a whole different set after I come back from E3 in the week. So, boy, oh boy. But I do want to thank everybody for listening all this time to this week in Defunct Games. Make sure, of course, to head on over to defunctgames.com and read my whole This Week in Defunct Games article. That's where you can learn even more about the three games that we talked very shortly about, at the very briefly about it.
And hey, if you guys have something that you want us to talk about or go over, you know, send it in. If you have a question or if there's a topic you want us to go over, whatever, you know. Absolutely. Well, at least look at your email and laugh at it, if nothing else.
Yes, yes, and... So, for Wes Grogan, my name is Cyril Lachelle, and this is This Week in Defunct Games, and I want to thank everybody for joining us. We'll be back next week with another episode, so until then, keep smiling.